This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Rightfully, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic. Jack McGraw running controls back in Houston. When it comes to what's happening between Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, I genuinely believe that he wants to leave Lambeau Field. He lost faith in Mike McCarthy. He wasn't enamored with his replacement, Matt LaFleur. The relationship was frosty, to say the least, in year one. And last season, it seemed like things were getting better, that there was a thawing out, if you will. But then came the NFC Championship game. Rodgers gets the Packers down to Tampa Bay's 8-yard line, down by 8 with a chance to tie the game. And LaFleur, he's going against Tom Brady in his own building, and his head coach takes him off the field in favor of a field goal to make it a 5-point game with 2:05 left to play. That certainly did not sit well. That's on top of the fact that they took Jordan Love in the first round a couple years ago. And by the way, followed that up with A.J. Dillon in the second round. Now look, I'm a big fan of A.J. Dillon. I covered him at Boston College. He's a very good player, a big running back, and an easy person to root for. But Aaron was looking for more help than a number two running back in the second round of the draft. And Rodgers is now engaged to Shailene Woodley. I don't know, and I'm not speculating, but it's certainly possible that she doesn't want to live in Green Bay or a surrounding community. And with Rodgers losing interest in staying in Green Bay, perhaps it made it even easier for her to voice that sentiment to Aaron. But I also believe that they are mostly negotiating in public between the Packers and Rodgers, of course. Bad blood aside, and my question to Green Bay is, what are you waiting for? I would have fired Brian Gutekunst, the GM who Rodgers wants out, without hesitation. The idea that they haven't gotten a deal done to this point does not look good on the Packers' front. And if you're a team like the Raiders or the Broncos, pony up, get Aaron Rodgers, and take Green Bay's seat as a title contender. Coming up, we're talking about instability on the hardwood, referring to Zion Williamson and Luka Doncic. Stick with us on the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
The Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network is presented to you by Rocket Mortgage. Home loan options for your family. Rocket can. We're going to get to Zion and the instability with the Pelicans and Luka and the same applying to the Dallas Mavericks in just a bit. But first, I want to dive into the Kemba Walker trade. The last few days, we know the NBA can stay relevant year-round, but the last few days, what they've done is given us double-barrel action, serving up appetizers, leading into what I consider to be the entree, which is the games at night. Other people, you prefer to play armchair GM and follow the rumor mill and all that. I get it. I'm not knocking you. To each their own. For me, the games are the entree, and these bombshells that we've been getting from Woj and Shams and of the sorts that they've been reporting on, those have been delicious appetizers, in my opinion. And the one we got served up today was Kemba Walker going from the Boston Celtics to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Our producer, Jack McGraw, was talking to me about this just before we came on the air, getting my take. I'm about to give it to you in depth. And so here's the deal. The Celtics are sending Walker, the 16th pick in this year's draft, and a 2025 second-round selection to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And in return, Al Horford comes back to Boston along with Moses Brown, who's actually a pretty good young big, especially from a depth perspective, and a 2023 second-round pick. When the Celtics signed Kemba Walker, it was a risky decision because, as I talked about earlier on in the program, when you get an undersized point guard who hits his late 20s, they tend not to age gracefully, especially the ones whose only on-court value is scoring. Now, Kemba, terrific person. He's a leader. He brings positive energy. And the Celtics really needed someone like that coming off of the sour taste they had after Kyrie left. And so Kemba, he certainly brings and brought to Boston tremendous off-court value. But on the court, he gives you one thing, and that's buckets. And when you look at Allen Iverson, who did a little more than that, but still I would put him in that category. When you look at the Isaiah Thomas, who interestingly enough played for the Celtics, when you look at all those types of players, Kyrie Irving, I talked about, 6'2", a little bit bigger, but the same thing with durability concerns. They tend not to age gracefully. So the Celtics took a gamble, and Walker, he was coming off a contract year where he exerted himself probably more than he has in any other NBA campaign, pushing himself to have the best year possible, which is understandable, and he made an all-NBA team, third team. And then he goes and plays in the Olympics right after that, and then they go into the season. And so he started in the All-Star game as the point guard in the East. Everything was going great, but he's on the back nine of his prime, and he ran up a lot of the meter and the miles left on that odometer. And so as a result, even with the long layoff before the season resumed last year, wasn't enough to get Kemba performing at the level he's capable of in the postseason. If he had been, I think the Celtics would have beaten the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals, and we would have had another classic showdown between the Celtics and the Lakers. Obviously, you put your money on LeBron and AD when they're healthy in that scenario, and you would expect the purple and gold to have won, but we would have got the two most iconic franchises in the NBA going head-to-head for the NBA title. What a way for Los Angeles to have earned a record-tying 17th banner, matching up with the amount the Celtics have, of course. But it didn't play out that way. And then the Celtics bent over backwards and did everything they could to make sure that Walker was healthy for the playoffs this year. He didn't play in back-to-backs at any point. They held him out for the start of the season, and it didn't matter. If you include the play-in tournament, he lasted four games before having to be shut down. He sat out game four, they lost, and then it didn't make sense to play him in game five against Brooklyn as the Celtics got eliminated. And at that point, there was a little bit of resentment from Walker because the Celtics tried to trade him this past offseason in order to acquire Jrue Holiday. That's a Danny Ainge staple right there. Once, even if you're a big signing, you're no longer valuable to the team, he will look to trade you. He's not alone in that regard, but when you have that reputation, anytime you follow through on that, there's a compounding tax. And so they were able to make it work this season, but once Walker wasn't able to go, and between the leap that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have made, it just wasn't a good fit on the hardwood like Danny Ainge envisioned it being when they took this gamble signing Kemba Walker, an undersized scorer hitting his late 20s. And so as a result, the ball needed to be in the hands of the Jays far more often. And when it came to Walker, his whole life, he's been the best scorer on his team. He's used to having the ball in his hands a lot. He's not an efficient scorer. He's a high-volume one. That was a tough role to adjust to with no practice time, with the injury. There's a lot working against Kemba, and so it's unfortunate that it didn't play out as well as him and the Celtics hoped when he came to Boston, but that was the reality. And so for Walker, the question is, where does he end up ultimately? Because he's not longed for Oklahoma City, and when does that happen? Chris Paul had to play out the entire season before getting to Phoenix. Is that going to be the case with Walker? We shall see. Does a team like the Dallas Mavericks, Jack, come calling at the deadline? Again, we shall see. As for the Celtics, Al Horford, I just talked about the on-court fit with Kemba and the dynamic changing. He fits better with this roster, a group that outside of Evan Fournier, he's largely familiar with. And what he gives them is another big man, which they needed because Robert Williams, as talented as he is, has trouble staying on the floor. He's another option to run the offense through, but at the same time doesn't need the ball in his hands or to shoot it anywhere near the level of Kemba Walker. And what he brings them with a more reliable defensive center. So Al Horford checks all the boxes that Boston was missing, and he's going to help with them facilitating the offense. It's a huge advantage for the Celtics. It's a dynamic they didn't have, especially after trading Daniel Theis last season at the deadline. And so now they're starting and closing lineup becomes Marcus Smart at the point, which is really going to benefit him and the team because he's an excellent facilitator. But playing alongside Kemba Walker, that means less touches and less shots, and therefore when he gets the ball, he's looking to shoot more frequently than certainly Celtics fans would like to see happen. This way, more touches, shots come easier and more in the rhythm of the offense as opposed to him hijacking it. So it's a cleaner fit, and again, it's going to help the Celtics' ball movement, which was one of their biggest weaknesses last season. And then you're going to have Evan Fournier and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and either Al Horford or Robert Williams. So we shall see what that means for Tristan Thompson and Grant Williams. I think at least one of them, and possibly both, depending on what's out there in the market, are going to get dealt. And with Thompson, I actually think he had a really good season for the Celtics last year when he was healthy. It took him a while to understandably shake off the rust. Cleveland, remember, didn't even earn an invite to the Orlando bubble. And then he had COVID and he was out for a while. So it's understandable. But when he was in there, even when he came back from health and safety protocols, made an immediate impact. The other thing is that if they're going to trade Thompson specifically, given the nature of his contract, it's either going to take a first-round pick, and they just gave up their selection this year, so I think that scenario is off the table, or you've got to find another team with a deal that they're looking to move off of in order to get it done, comparable to what just happened with Kemba Walker and Al Horford. But for the Celtics, moving Kemba Walker and improving your ball movement and having this cleaner fit on the floor, it still means they need to address the issue of adding scoring, not just redistributing it. They were middle of the pack in points per game last season. So if they're going to up that and go further, it can't just be a matter of better ball movement or relying on growth from internally. I think they're going to have to go out and add more scoring, and they're a bit handcuffed now, but they have to find ways to upgrade the rotation. And I've got a little bit more to say about this matter, but quickly what I'll tell you is this. According to Keith Smith, who covers the NBA for SpotTrack and Yahoo Sports, among other outlets, the Celtics can now position themselves a move or two away from being able to sign a max free agent in the summer of 2022. There are a lot of household names who will or could be free agents that summer. Kevin Durant and James Harden have player options worth north of $40 million. Neither one is realistic. But the player to keep an eye on is Bradley Beal, who has a player option worth $35.9 million. And so with Beal, I don't think it's worth it for the Celtics to trade Jaylen Brown for Bradley Beal or anyone else, regardless of what that means for their championship matters. But nonetheless, it seems like a scenario is starting to open up where the Celtics could sign Bradley Beal without having to trade Jaylen Brown for him. And if they have a big three of Tatum, Beal, and Brown, that's a legitimate title contender. So after the tailspin that Kyrie Irving's departure left the Celtics in, it seems like they might just land on their feet and that the shakeup they're undergoing is reinvigorating the franchise. Coming up next, we've got a lot to talk about, including a gambling corner with Connor Mack from Pub Sports Radio. Stick with us here on the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Now let's get out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. We are joined for the second week in a row by Connor Mack, a sports handicapper for Pub Sports Radio, quickly becoming a GFOP that is a good friend of the program. Connor, thank you for taking the time to join us tonight.
Oh, always, Bobby. It's a pleasure. I love it, especially this time of year.
Oh, it's my favorite, Connor. And so just like last week, let's start on the hardwood. Game six tonight between the Hawks and the Sixers. Are you betting on Atlanta to punch a ticket to the conference finals, or should people put their money on Philly to force a game seven?
Wow, that's a really great question. I would think I didn't bet the game. I'm on the under, just to let you know. I didn't take Philly with the 3 points to win the game, but I think Philly can pull this out. And I think we go back. We got a Foster referee here in this game. I think this can get back to Philly and they can win it. It's very close right now. It's going to be a dogfight. My under looks pretty good here. The third quarter is just ending. But, yeah, I think Philly can pull it out tonight.
Yeah, Sixers on top, 80-76 heading into the final frame. I said earlier in the show that if the Sixers win this game, they'll win the series. This, for all intents and purposes, is game seven, in my opinion. Now, I know you stayed away from this matchup, but are there any prop bets that you like in tonight's game?
This one, I only went with Collins' three-pointer, and then my guy who's not having a good game, he's had me the last four or five, with Sweet Lou Williams. Limit Pepper Chicken Lou, he's got nothing tonight. I had his over 7.5. I kind of been riding him, but he's got nothing tonight. Those are my only props on this game.
The other game taking place tonight is also an elimination game. The Clippers got it done in Utah without Kawhi Leonard. Who do you recommend backing tonight?
This is another fantastic one. So what do you go with? The Jazz, who have no bench. Clarkson's the only guy who can't shoot.
Mike Conley's giving it a go, though.
Mike Conley's giving it a go. Will he be 50%? Mitchell, he's kind of got that flat tire, that wheel. He did not look right last game. But I think he's tough. He's going to go out there. I think the Jazz get it done. But, like, there, I don't want to lay the points either. Both these teams have been franchises that struggle in these games, in elimination games. I think the Clippers haven't. They're 0-6 dating back to back when Chris Paul was there, the Lob City time. They're not. They can't close it out. No Kawhi. The Jazz got to seize the moment, I think, here and win this game. But it won't be easy. The bench hasn't been good at all. And you got to leave it up to the three ball. And that's what I kind of go into my props for tonight. I think you look toward the threes. Bogdanovich. All these guys for the Jazz. O'Neal, I have the O'Neal prop over 7.5. Kind of like Lou Williams, I've been on him for the last, 8 to 10 games, and it's only 7.5 points. I think he gets over that again. And also, Reggie Jackson, a guy who's just been, now the odds aren't as great on his points and three-pointers, but he continues to get around 20 points. Some games he's had almost 30. He's been really huge. So is Morris. So look to those guys for lots of threes in this game, and I think lots of points. It should be really, really exciting.
And then Paul George stepped up with 37 points on Wednesday. The Clippers are going to need him to come through for them again in Game 6. In terms of his individual scoring, what's the line you have to see to advise laying the over?
On his point total?
Correct.
I have it at 30.5. I think that's about right. He's got to score over 30 points tonight for the Clippers to be in it. So I lean towards him getting over. It's juiced to right around 125, 130. So you got to lay 130 to get back 100. But he has to be the guy again. He's got to shoot. And his three-pointers. I loved it last game. I played it. And he came out big. Rebounds, I think he had 15 last game. So will Paul George step it up? It's not easy to bet a guy that's been – you can't count on, but he has to be counted on. He will shoot the ball a lot tonight. He should score over 30. So I would go with his over point total. He's got to show up, though.
I'm with you. I think that he hits the over. I don't know if that translates to a Clippers win, but without it, you would think it certainly spells a loss. Tomorrow night, it's game 7 between the Bucks and the Nets. I want to start with a prop bet. Kevin Durant had arguably the best playoff game of his career in Game 5 at Barclays, erupting for 49 points. How high can his over-under be that you'll still recommend laying the over?
I think it'll be about 33.5. I'm guessing right around maybe 34.5, and he's got to go over. I know Harden came back. I got 16.5. Harden had 14 last night. He came out pretty good, and he's getting better, I think, a little healthier. And 2 points, they pulled him out of the game. And, wow, that was a mess of a game. And this one is a sloppy one. This one should be interesting. Giannis finally stopped shooting threes. He got to the bucket, but Middleton, he had a huge game with Giannis yesterday. They came up big. So, yeah, I'd go with the over with Durant. He is the guy, and he has to be the guy. Big-time player, big-time plays, big-time games, you know, all that stuff I kind of bring up. He's got to be it again, I think. So I'd lean towards the over with him with his points.
Milwaukee started to figure out that they're playing a team that can really only operate from the half court right now. So after fast break points, it was 2-2 in game five, which is absurd if you're the Bucks. And then it was something like 26-4 in favor of Milwaukee in game six. So that's an advantage they'll need to take into game seven. Just like you said, Giannis, no three-point attempts. Stay away from shooting from beyond the arc. Which of these two teams should people back to get to the Eastern Conference Finals?
Wow, when this comes down to it, I want – and the Bucks did it. They did it on their home floor. But it's tough right now. I got to go Nets at home. With Harden, hopefully the crowd is buzzing. It will be there in the Barclays in Brooklyn. They should get it done, I believe. But this is tough. Harris, none of these guys have shown up. That bench is just nowhere to be found, and it's tough to find any other points on that roster right now. Blake Griffin, Harden's okay. They're just – it's going to be very difficult. I see just a slugfest. I think it gets some more – I see another under as well, and I will be on the under. Game seven, everything, you know, clamps down. Maybe some points early, but I, you know, in these elimination games, game seven, defense is the priority. Everything slows down, especially in the second half. So I will definitely be on the under tomorrow night, full game. And I got to lean Nets. I got to take Harden here. Can the Bucks get it done? They haven't done it in 2 or 3 years. Can they do this? It's not a huge no, but I got to lean the Nets at home here.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that low scoring is something Milwaukee would sign up for. But at the same time, I just have more confidence in the Brooklyn Nets and who they've got on their side of the aisle. Switching gears now, on the ice, game three between the Knights and Canadiens. It's midway through the second frame. It's 1-1. Are there any prop bets left that you like in this matchup?
No, there wasn't any really props that I touched on today. I was on the Habs first period. And the under, when that went. I'm on the full game under. And I took a little on the Habs. And this is coming from a Vegas guy. I might catch a little heat. I think they looked better, but and Vegas comes out slow, and they did. But it ended up being 0-0 in the first period. But I thought the Habs could have got a goal early. Vegas scores one in the second, and now they just tied it up, the Canadiens. Man, it should be a good one. I do have the under. I think this just goes stays here. Maybe 2-2. We could get OT. Very good one here. Vegas, it was going to be difficult, but I think they get one up there. I think this series is very long going forward.
So who do you recommend backing to ultimately advance out of this series and get to the Stanley Cup Finals?
Wow, that's a great question. I'd have to go with the Knights. And we'll see, though. One thing I mentioned about the Knights, they don't do anything easy. They beat the Avalanche, and everyone thinks they're just going to go through the Canadiens here. And it kind of game one, after the first period, they went through them. I'm not so sure here. I think this is 6 or 7, but I got to give it to the Knights. On home ice, I think they could get it done, especially if it goes game seven.
And tomorrow night is game four between the Lightning and the Islanders. Tampa leads the series 2-1. Where can people find value betting on that matchup?
Wow, this is a good one. I think there's value with the under. Vasilevskiy's been so good. He was so good last night. 2-1. I mean, that first 15 minutes of the third period, the Islanders threw everything at him and couldn't tie that game. 2-1. The last 5 minutes, the Lightning were really great, held the puck. Held off for the win. But, man, was he good back there. The blue line was great for the Lightning. I got a little thing for the Islanders. And if they're going to do it, it has to be at home, right? So I'm going with the Islanders. A little plus money home dog. If they don't do it now, they won't do it. And the Lightning are a great team. But give me that place rocking the barn. Give me the Islanders. Plus
Connor Mack from Pub Sports Radio, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. Stick with us here on the Die Hard.
You're listening to The Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to The Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic. Jack McGraw running controls back in Houston. We got to all the action on the ice. We covered every series. There's one we have left to discuss on the hardwood. That is between the Clippers and Jazz. There is an elimination game tonight. But let's start with, quite frankly, the biggest news from that series, and that is Kawhi Leonard's knee injury, which they're fearing. They're hoping it's not, but have to wait for the swelling to subside to get the X-ray results necessary to find out for sure that it's an ACL injury. And when it happens this late in the year, it likely means, you never know for sure, you'd hope it's not the case, but most likely, if Kawhi Leonard tore his ACL, he's out for all of next season as well. And what that means for the Clippers franchise moving forward, people will overreact. They'll tell you they're moving to Seattle, for example. They're going to Las Vegas. That's not grounded in reality. They're getting ready to move in to their own arena and finally detach themselves from Staples Center and the Los Angeles Lakers. They will always be little brother in that city. But Steve Ballmer is not about to uproot. They do have the advantage, like the Lakers, of being in the most glamorous market in the country. So while they might not be the most glamorous brand in the NBA, they're still an attractive destination to come live in. They've got an owner that will spend whatever it takes to win a title. He's already put that on display. But they traded away 5 first-round picks and 2 pick swaps to get Paul George to team with Kawhi Leonard to win a title. And last year in the bubble, I don't care how you spin it, they choked. And this year, the Lakers go out in round one. The road is wide open for them. They haven't looked great at any stage of the playoffs. It goes 7 with Dallas in the first round, a team they consistently now have trouble with. It looks like they're starting to figure out the Jazz. They come back to even it up 2-2. And now they got to go the rest of the way without Kawhi Leonard. Now, Paul George, Kevin Durant, that was a legacy game for him in Game 5 when he dropped 49 on the Bucks. No, he couldn't lose his standing, but he had something to gain because he hasn't been on a team that wasn't the most talented in the league since he left Oklahoma City. So to go out there and put the Nets on his back where, yes, he got 27 from Jeff Green and Blake Griffin stepped up as well, that was largely Durant. And because of the dumbfounding strategy on the Bucks' part that they kept attacking KD one-on-one defensively when Durant is also their best defensive player, that's not how you want to wear out that guy. And it didn't work, and they kept running their head into the same brick wall. And sure enough, they came up short. And now, credit to them for pulling out Game 6. But it's the reason that there is a Game 7 is because as amazing and brilliant as KD was, the Bucks also blew that game and were complicit in collapsing. And when it comes to the Clippers, Paul George, I think that was a legacy game for him on Wednesday night. 37 points, 16 rebounds, 5 assists. He hit the biggest shot of the game as well. It looked like the Jazz were starting to make a run. And Reggie Jackson and Nicholas Batum, they stepped up and hit a couple big shots, a pair of threes, to go and change it from a 4-point game to pushing the Clippers back up by 10. But it got competitive again. And Paul George, when he draws the foul on Donovan Mitchell, buries the shot, and heads to the line, that's when you knew that this game was likely over. So for Paul George to have the best game of anyone on the floor, I don't care who's injured, Donovan Mitchell, like we talked about with Connor Mack from Pub Sports Radio, Donovan Mitchell on one wheel, Paul George was the best player on the floor on a night where he really had to step up and do that for his team, who's gone all out. They've even extended him with a max contract on top of what they paid to bring him to Los Angeles, and he delivered, including the biggest shot in the game, to pretty much clinch it for Los Angeles. So kudos to him. Can you do it again, PG? Because if Los Angeles wants to stamp its ticket to the Western Conference Finals, like, again, we talked about with Connor Mack, Pub Sports Radio. He's a sports handicapper, very in tune with these things. PG's got to score 30-plus, and that doesn't even guarantee a Clips win. So we'll see whether or not he steps up for the second game in a row. Now, like I said, the Jazz, they made it a 4-point game with 8:15 left, and the Clippers really looked like they were reeling. And it wasn't Paul George who first got them to collect themselves. It was Reggie Jackson and Nicholas Batum hitting a pair of threes to put the Clippers back up double digits. And then Paul George carried them home from there and delivered the dagger. Jackson had 22 points. Batum had 9 points to go along with 7 rebounds and 4 steals. And Marcus Morris had 25 points. And so I think that the Jazz have a more talented group of role players when you look at Bogdanovich and the job that he did on Kawhi Leonard defensively in Game 2, where he limited him to 2 points in the final frame of a Utah win. And Joe Ingles and his ability to facilitate and shoot the lights out. But it was the Clippers role players who stepped up. It was that supporting cast who really helped Los Angeles make sure that they didn't head back to Staples Center down 3-2, putting them in a position to go home and close the series out. So you got to give them credit for outperforming their counterparts the other night. We'll see again, just like with Paul George, can they repeat that level of production? Because they're going to need it. Otherwise, this is another series that is going 7. And for Utah, in the first half, they made 17 of 33s. But they also had 11 turnovers, and so they were only up 65-60. And that was a rather significant warning sign that they were actually in trouble despite how well they played in the first half. Donovan Mitchell, he had 21 points on 19 shots. He only got 5 points at the line, and he started to get it going. I thought he was at his best in the final frame, but it wasn't good enough, and he admitted that he can barely get off the ground right now. That's not the approach that you usually hear from superstars admitting publicly, but he's young, and when you watch the games, it's also obvious, and the Clippers are aware. This is a guy who came into the postseason with an ankle injury, and it's certainly gotten worse over the course of this series. So I think they've got to go right at him defensively and really make him work hard and do everything in their power to make sure a young burgeoning star in this league doesn't put the Jazz on his back tonight despite the injury and bring this game back to Salt Lake City. It might help, it might hurt, but Mike Conley in the lineup tonight, he's been dealing with a hamstring injury, and we'll see where he's at. It hasn't been that long of an absence that I would think rust, but still, when it comes to conditioning and having his rhythm, we're going to see where he's at and what he's able to contribute if he's able to help out this Utah Jazz squad. At a minimum, he lengthens out the rotation, which Quinn Snyder and company will appreciate. And so the reason I haven't given you a prediction yet is because I don't have a lean on this game. I'm not there, and I don't want to be there. I want to go into this game viewing it as a toss-up, and we're just going to see how it unfolds. So you're not getting a prediction from me on this one. As much as I love to give takes, as much as I tell you what I think will happen, can't do it this time around. I think that this is one of those games that's genuinely up for grabs, even more so than Milwaukee-Brooklyn. And yes, I'm not from the future, so I don't know how any of these events are going to play out, but I'm more confident in how that game's going to end, and that is Brooklyn advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals, than whether or not the Jazz-Clippers series ends tonight. So that's my take on that, and I've been teasing you throughout the show about what's the deal with Zion and the Pelicans and Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks. Given that my producer Jack McGraw has an affinity for the latter of those two franchises, I'll start with Luka the Don and what's going on with the Dallas Mavericks. Tim Cato and Shams Charania of The Athletic did a really interesting piece this week about instability in Dallas and how this guy, Bob Vulgaris, he started as an outside influence that had Mark Cuban's ear, and he was very influential, as crazy as this might sound, in convincing Cuban to make the trade to go draft Luka Doncic. And from there, his influence has only increased, and so Donnie Nelson, who is one of the best at running a front office. He's been there 23 years, and they have one of the winningest records in the NBA during his tenure, including a championship in 2011. Jack, you might remember that. And so Donnie Nelson, he decides that it's time for him to go. Was he run out by Vulgaris? Did he just grow sick of it? That we're not certain of, but it wouldn't surprise me in the least if it's the latter. The one that was more shocking to me was Rick Carlisle departing. And I've actually heard the rumblings about this possibility all season long, and it's probably been talked about in league circles longer than that. But Carlisle, he is a micromanager. And sometimes he can find a point guard who that works well with, like a Jason Kidd. Jason Terry's not a true point guard by any means, but he did have the ball in his hands a lot over the course of his Mavericks career. And those two got along famously. But it did not work out with Rajon Rondo, to say the least. And Luka Doncic didn't love having a coach who's a micromanager, especially on the side of the ball that he makes the greatest impact on the game offensively. And Carlisle, you would think the reaction would be to adjust, to make it work, to communicate with your young star point guard and stay in the situation you have. You've been in Dallas for this long, but he decides to uproot, and he's looking to get back into coaching immediately. He's not trying to be an analyst. You won't catch him on TNT this year unless these interviews really go wrong for him. Perhaps he's eyeing the Boston Celtics job. That's the team that drafted him. He spent 3 years with them. He won a championship with them. By no means was he at the forefront of that rotation, but nonetheless has a ring from his time with the Celtics. And Red Auerbach, I once asked Rick Carlisle about his influence, and he absolutely acknowledged that Auerbach is one of those figures that helped get him into coaching. So maybe Rick Carlisle takes his talents back to Boston, where he was as a player, for at least a chunk of his career to start it off. Maybe the Milwaukee Bucks job opens up and he goes there. That's a team that's ready to compete right now for a title. The head coach, as I said earlier in the program, is the biggest issue holding them back. I think that's also a squad that would take well to Rick Carlisle's style of coaching. Someone who's a micromanager who can bring a different nature than what Budenholzer provided. I think this is a group that has repeatedly been humbled in the playoffs, and they're not known for big egos. I think they would respond better than Luka Doncic, for example, to Rick Carlisle's style of coaching and his hands-on approach. As for Zion Williamson and the New Orleans Pelicans, it was very obvious him and his camp did not hide it going into the draft where they wanted to be, and that's where his counterpart from Duke, R.J. Barrett, ended up in New York City with the Knicks. Didn't happen. He goes to the Pelicans. He famously says, "Let's dance." I think he's ready to go take a seat and cut the music. So far, they've run through two coaches. They decided, and maybe he was on board with this, but they decided it's not worth really pushing our chips into the middle to get into the playoffs last year in the bubble. We want to get Zion the whole offseason to trade. He was probably on board with that, if I got to give my 2 cents on it. But then this year, he didn't love Stan Van Gundy, so he's out after one season. I don't get how you can have a player as good as Zion and not decide to go all in for a championship, especially when you collect the bevy of draft picks that David Griffin did. But instead, he brings in Steven Adams, who's a clunky fit. Eric Bledsoe doesn't help matters because he can't shoot. And so they just ride with a roster that's basically punting on Zion's second season in the league. This guy is a unicorn. He's ready to compete for titles right now. And we have no idea about the longevity of Zion Williamson as an NBA player and how long he'll be a star in this league, because his build is one of one. And so to waste the season, I don't care that it's early, you got to cash your chips in and go out and compete for the Larry O'Brien trophy while you have this guy, because he's already let it be known that he didn't come to be patient. He's not waiting around. And that's why Stan Van Gundy's out. We'll see who they get. I consider it an attractive opening because of Zion. But look, the Pelicans, you go around the state of Louisiana, especially the city of New Orleans, and they probably don't even take home the silver medal in terms of most popular teams in that area. But Zion, he was putting up 27 points per game this season, the eighth most in the league, to go along with 7 rebounds and 4 assists. He got to the rim and the free throw line at will, and the Pelicans wasted it. And he was doing that, like I said, with guys who can't shoot. So if you're David Griffin, you're running out of chances, and you better get it right this summer. All right, coming up, we will put a bow on tonight's edition of the Diehards. I'm Bobby Krivitsky, Jack McGraw running the show back in Houston. Stick with us here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic, Jack McGraw producing the show back in Houston. Jack, it's getting testy in Atlanta. Joel Embiid and John Collins, tempers flaring.
It certainly looks like it. I mean, John Collins had Joel Embiid landed on him, and he was trying to push him off, and that led to fists were thrown. Trae Young did do a little shove to try to be peacekeeper with Joel Embiid and John Collins, but it looks like maybe some double technicals. Nothing too serious. No one should be thrown out, we hope.
Yeah, I would hate to see someone get tossed. Like you said, I think it's double technicals. Maybe there's a little bit more than that, because what started all this, and I'm sure that it's been going on throughout the game, I've just been looking over periodically, but on this play specifically, it began with a Joel Embiid elbow. That's what kicked off the melee, if you will. Trae Young, I don't know if he was quite playing peacekeeper with that push, but certainly didn't really do anything at his size against Joel Embiid to escalate the matter. That's going to put a bow on tonight's edition of the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Thank you so much to everyone for tuning in. We covered every NBA and NHL series, talked about Mavs and Pelicans instability, and all I can say is I hope you enjoyed listening and enjoy your weekend. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.